And support begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Nurture and Support, a recommendation podcast sharing all the awesome. I'm Kelly Toole, at K-E-L-L-Y-T-H-U-L on Twitter. And with me, as always, and as always advancing the Amazon Prime directive, is Mel.
Hey guys, it's Mel at Karmic9 on Twitter, and another week, I believe this is episode 54.
84. Amazing. Yeah, that's, well, two whole episodes into our second year. Just rocking.
It's so, a slog. We might not make it.
That's right. One show at a time. That's the way we go. So yeah. I'm excited to get going right away and share my recommendation. And this comes just a little bit of backstory for you folks. So all the timing on this is a little unclear, but at some point in time, Nurture and Support will also be able to be listened to on Live 365's Loud and Loaded. And so you'll be able to kind of catch us there, which we're obviously excited about. And then Mike Walensky, who's the station owner for that, has been doing a series of things he calls Fireside Chats. So he's started his own podcast called Fireside Chats for Loud and Loaded. And to date, as we record this, he's published a couple already, one with Gerald Webb, which is really great. And also, interesting, Dylan Lang has been one. And sometime in the not-so-distant future, you'll get a chance to hear Mel and I, because we actually did a Fireside Chat with Mike talking about nurture and support. So looking forward to that. But the reason I give all that backstory outside of just tuning you into Nurture and Support News is that during that show, Mel said something. I think it hurt, but then I decided to own it because, you know, it was true. And so I really couldn't be like offended. But we were just kind of sharing, you know, Mike had been asked about the background of the show and how it came into being. And so we were talking about it, and we're just making some references to the fact that while we have some very common interests in a lot of things nerdy and geeky, we're also two pretty different individuals in terms of some of our other interests. So it's been a good way to expose each of us to some different territory, and we trust each other's judgment. However, Mel phrased it as something along the lines of, yeah, it's been really good because Kelly's been recommending a lot of really old music. And so old music that I would never be familiar with if it wasn't for Kelly. And it's true, and I'm going to do it again today.
Not an insult.
It is not recent. I will give you that. A lot of my recommendations have not been recent, that's for sure. And in fact, what I'm going to be doing today is I'm recommending, it's a cheat recommendation as I like to do from time to time, I'm really going to be recommending one album, which was actually released in 1982. But the other albums that kind of are related to it started in 78. So between 78 and 82, these all came out. And so it fits the kind of old category. But without further ado, my recommendation for this week is Ambient 4 by Brian Eno, On Land. So a little bit about Brian Eno. Brian Eno was originally a member, there was a group called Roxy Music that Brian Ferry was in. Kind of a glam. Yeah, he goes, there you go. Al Jolson and Roxy Music and kind of a glam rock, art rock group. And Brian played keyboard, did background vocals. And at that point, he had, you know, that unfortunate hair situation of long blonde hair, but thinning on top. So kind of the riffraff look from Rocky Horror Picture Show. But he would wear really out there outfits, kind of the Elton John-esque, big, glam, rocky kind of things, play the keyboard and sing. Very good singer, very good synthesizer and keyboard player, but more than anything else, the guy's, he's a genius, is basically what he is. He was waiting on a subway station platform, and he ran into the bass player of Roxy Music, and they kind of said, hey, we need a keyboard player, do you want to do that? And so he got involved with Roxy Music. He calls himself a non-musician, which I think is pretty far from the case, but we'll he can call himself whatever he likes. And he kind of said, you know, if I just walked a little bit further down the platform, I'd be probably teaching music or those types of things. So he just kind of happened into it, was with Roxy Music for 2 years, didn't like the lifestyle, didn't like Brian Ferry, a lot of creative differences. So he kind of went off and has then had this amazing career. He's produced four of the U2 albums, including the Joshua Tree. He produced David Bowie's what's called the Berlin Trilogy of David Bowie, which is Low, Heroes, and Lodger. He's done a ton of work with Robert Fripp, who you'll probably hear from again later. He was the author of the Windows 95 tone, the 3.3¼-second long tone of a Windows 95 Brian Eno composed.
And everybody knows it.
He says it's my most popular piece of music, which is really accurate. And the interesting thing there was he actually created 85 different versions of that before they settled on the one to do that. So in a future recommendation on a different artist, there'll be another contributor to the Windows soundscape, but Brian Eno did Windows 95. So he's done all those different things. But he got into a period of time where he was interested in what was called ambient music, and he said he was sitting in a really nice airport, and it was beautiful, and it was new, and the sun was out, and everything was perfect. And they spent millions on the architecture, everything was perfect, and they're playing the most horrific music I've ever heard. It was like someone just brought a mixtape in and stuck it in. And he goes, that's a real shame if you're going to invest. He likes to put music where he feels music and art is lacking. And he goes, I really think someone should compose something specifically for an airport. But then he also had kind of different ideas. He's like, and I'm not looking for this kind of confidence-building music, like I'm at the airport and I'm completely safe and I'm not going to die. He says, that really wasn't what I was looking for. He goes, instead what I wanted to do, you know, if I die, it'll be okay. That was kind of more kind of a serene. He goes, there's pressure and tension in the airports, and what's one take music just kind of was a calming influence and took it out. So Ambient One was his first of the four Ambient series he did, and that was music for airports. And so basically it is something you can put on a permanent loop and just play in the background of an airport forever. And it was actually played in LaGuardia in the 80s for a while. So it did get a little actual music for airports. So if you'll hear, you know, so now all the New Age stuff comes out. So imagine if you've heard some New Age music, and instead of being composed by the people who composed it, it was composed by somebody who was brilliant and had just kind of all sorts of very intriguing artistic ideas to create a soundscape. So like good New Age music. And so you know, he says, I want my music to be as interesting as it is easy to ignore in the Ambient series. Just something that just kind of melds its way in. So the first one was Ambient One with music for airports, which I'm a big fan of, but not my recommendation. The second one was called The Plateau of Mirror, Day of Radiance, and he actually did that as a collaboration with Harold Budd, who's a keyboardist and a piano player. And so in this case here, it was mostly featuring the piano of Harold Budd. And that was Ambient 2. Ambient 3 came out, and that featured an artist called, I'm going to butcher this name, Laraj. And Laraj plays the zither and the hammered dulcimer. And so that's actually Day of Radiance is 3 there. So you've got Plateau of Mirror and then Day of Radiance. And then my recommendation, Ambient 4, On Land. And what's kind of neat, when you go in and you reviewed the write-ups on all these albums for the first three, for the music type, it says ambient, 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 until you get to 4. And 4 it lists ambient, comma, dark ambient. And so where the other ones were just kind of that idea of getting you calm, you don't really care if you die if you're in the airport, and all those types of things. There's a sense of something coming. There's a sense of something that you want to be paying a little bit more attention with on land, and it's just ever so slight and it's dialed up a little bit, so it's not like a harrowing album to listen to, but there's like an anticipation in it, and it's a darker sound and those types of things. And any one of these is great. I have always favored On Land. I have the vinyl for On Land and played the heck out of it when I had it. He had on the back of the album instructions on how to best place your speakers to get full enjoyment out of On Land at the time as well. And so just fascinating, fascinating stuff. He continues to create, continues to collaborate. He's just recently done an installation that's called 77 Million Paintings, and it's 77 million paintings running through a cycle of infinite repeats. And he's done the calculation, because it's 77 million paintings on about 18 different displays, and he says it'll take you about 400 million years to watch all of them and see all combinations. And he's done that on the sail of the Sydney Opera House, and kind of displayed it up there, and so it has the visual part going and the music. He's partnering with some, I think it's David Hyde, on an app that's available. You have to pay for it. It's not inexpensive, but you can create your own ambient music with that. And he's really started to pull, what he's pointed to is the kind of the advent of the app puts a computer in everybody's pocket, and you can just start to do these combinations of the visual and the music. And so he's trying to create tools for people to do it himself. And then he's also and continues to do other things in music as well. So it's been really fun. So I recommend, you can go, basically all the ambient albums are on YouTube. So you can just go fire that up in a tab, turn it on, and just kind of let it play away in the background. And just enjoy the heck out of it from there. So On Land is fantastic. I also and the guy's got just this huge catalog of music. So he's got the ambient stuff. Before that, when he left Roxy Music, he did this kind of hybrid that was like probably a precursor to some of the punk stuff, but it also had some art rock in it, and some of the best titles ever, like The Taking of Tiger Mountain by Strategy is the name of one of the albums, which is possibly one of my favorite album. He has a book called A Year with the Swollen Appendices. So he writes, he does visual installations, he does music. He's just an amazing guy. You can catch a couple interviews with him. For as smart as he is, he doesn't let on that he knows as smart as he is. he just kind of talks about it. He's always very engaging with the interviewer. He's been on Colbert on occasion. And unfortunately, he and Michael Stipe from REM and Stephen Colbert, because another of his hobbies is, well, I do barbershop things, and I just bring in people from the city, bankers, lawyers, whatever, who like to do barbershop, and we just do some barbershop stuff. And they did a barbershop version of Lean on Me, Stephen Colbert's, and Michael Stipe and Brian Eno. And unfortunately, that video is no longer available on YouTube or on the Colbert site. So I was hoping to include that, but just kind of cool stuff. So I said he's probably one of our greatest composers, doesn't get a lot of attention. If you want to... Ambient music's pretty cool. I like it. I think it's kind of a pretty cool thing to kind of have around. Music for Airports and On Land of the four are my favorite two. On Land's my favorite because I guess I'm a dark ambient guy. But that's what I would recommend. So I'm going Brian Eno, Ambient 4, On Land as my recommendation for this week.
Cool. That was probably about the time frame that I first started hearing about Brian, you know, when he was starting to do the ambient. There was a website back at the beginning of the digital music age called mp3.com. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but he was one of the first people, at least that I remember, talking about the importance of not having DRM in digital music, and he would give his music away. And that was basically my first exposure to him, was way back then when the digital music was first becoming a big thing. Back then, if you downloaded a digital music file, it was only going to play from the store that you bought it from. It wasn't going to be able to be played on any other device or with any different program. And I've always remembered that was basically the first time I'd heard of him. though I am familiar with Roxy Music, I didn't realize he was in there at any time. But we all know that I'm not that particular about some of the music. But I've always liked him, and I love his ambient stuff. But I don't know enough to know which songs you're talking about, so I'm going to have to go back and listen to that album, because dark ambient totally sounds like my theme.
Yeah, I can see that. And it's tough because, like, on Music for Airport, four tracks, and the tracks are titled 1/1, 1/2, 2/1, and 2/2. And yeah. So those are, you know, but he actually has titles for on land and the other ones as well. But
cool. That's awesome. I like him, and I know who he is. So he still gives away some of his music for free. I don't know how much of it proportionally, but he still does. So that's always great.
Yeah, and he's big now. His latest thing is generative music, so it is leveraging the technology and all that, mm-hmm. so that it is. He says instead of being the architect, you're a gardener. And so instead of the artist saying, here, behold what I have built architecturally, here's this great song, this great album, it's more, hey, here's the garden. I've done some starts. I've planted some seeds. Let's see what happens. You tend to it, too. And so this generative music piece. And so I think now as you go into some of his sites, you get a chance to even interact more with some of the things as well. And a lot of times at no cost, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's neat. It's nice to see artists like that try to basically teach a little art to the rest of us who might be a little challenged in that area, and see that everybody can be an artist in their own way, but he doesn't want me to compose music because that would not go well. So speaking of dark ambient, my recommendation is kind of dark. I'm not sure we could put it in the ambient section, but it's definitely a little dark. It's a book series, which right now just has basically kind of a title of the Eric Carter series. There's only two books in it so far, and they list them as Eric Carter 1 and Eric Carter 2. So the first book in the series is called Dead Things, and this series is written by one of my previous social media recommendations, Stephen Blackmore. His Twitter handle is @sblackmore. And I don't remember what episode I recommended him in, but he is great on Twitter. But he's also a great writer. And I finally got around to reading both of these books, and I loved them so much that I read them both over a weekend. This is the story of a guy named Eric Carter, who is a necromancer. This is urban fantasy, one would say. So it's set in our world right now. And there are people with magic running around, and he happens to be a necromancer, which is not very common. He has been basically not really on the run, but he got kicked out of Los Angeles where he grew up, and he's been gone for 15 years. The first book starts with him basically getting a phone call that his sister has been murdered, and he has to go back to Los Angeles to find out what happened to her. And he left very abruptly. As the story goes on, you kind of find out why he left abruptly. His parents were killed by a mobster who was also magical. And he was basically extorting the people in the magical community for protection money. And killed Eric's parents because they were kind of standing up to him. So right after the funeral, Eric, still in his funeral suit, goes and kills the mobster in a very spectacular kind of way. And he's basically told by the guy second in command to get out of town, or he was going to kill his sister and everybody he knew, all the way down to like his third grade teacher. So he packs up his car and he leaves town, and he's been gone for 15 years. And in that 15 years, he's basically just been getting by, trying to learn more about what he can do. You could almost say he's kind of like a hitman for hire. He takes care of little problems that you need a necromancer for. And apparently there's more of these little issues running around than you or I might think. So I'm going to read you the little blurb that is basically the description of the book to give you an idea, because it can say it a lot better than I can. Necromancer is such an ugly word, but it's a title Eric Carter is stuck with. He sees ghosts, talks to the dead. He's turned it into a lucrative career, putting troublesome spirits to rest, sometimes taking on even more dangerous things, for a fee, of course. When he left L.A. 15 years ago, he thought he'd never go back. Too many bad memories, too many people trying to kill him. But now his sister's been brutally murdered, and Carter wants to find out why. So, it's a very noir-type story. He's not a detective, but this is a very gritty, dark... They are not afraid to kill people in this book. And while Eric is sort of a decent sort of guy, you really definitely don't want to get in his way. He doesn't have a problem killing people. He's tattooed all over with these cool, magical tattoos. They do these tattoos on people in this magical ink, and they're actually basically protection spells that can protect him from bullets, knife blade. Some of them can even spring, you know, come to life and protect him. He's got some bird tattoo. I believe it's some crows. And he can actually summon them out of his tattoo briefly to protect him.
And they fly out of the tattoo, or does he have to, like, rub his arm on them?
No, he triggers the spell, and they, I don't even know if they really, you know, like, they don't tear themselves out of his skin, but, you know, they basically materialize. They also, this tattoo of the crows in particular, also moves around. The birds move around on his body, which is a little disturbing, he says. But it's really pretty neat. The magic system that they've put into this book is really, it's a little different than we're used to. But then again, it's also dealing mostly with necromancy. He sees spirits everywhere. And he likes spirits. He has spent more time with the dead people than he really has with people that are alive. And he actually seeks out justice for some of the dead that he comes across because they've hung around following their murderer or things like that. And he tries to give them some peace when he can. And he's not afraid to, like I said, kill some people in the pursuit of those goals. But when you get on his bad side, he's really not afraid to kill you and anybody that gets in between the two of you. So he has to come back and deal with all of the things that you would think when somebody leaves town. He left his girlfriend. His best friend, who was a petty criminal when he left, is now a big business owner and has basically raised his little sister that he left behind. Oh, and Oops is also dating his ex-girlfriend that he left behind, too.
Oops.
This, you know, might be a problem. But the best part is that in the midst of these 15 years, as he has been growing in power, and he's been, as that book starts, he's doing a job for some other death gods, some big-time spirits who basically hired him to kill this other spirit that was eating up weaker spirits, making itself stronger. That sounds all convoluted and stupid, but it's really pretty cool that he's doing jobs for minor death gods that we may or may not have heard of.
So how does Mel make a distinction between a minor death god and a major death god?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. That's one of those things that I like about urban fantasy that brings in our modern mythology, or not modern mythology, but the mythologies that we're all familiar with. Those are some voodoo gods, basically, that he got hired to do that job for. As he gets into L.A., though, he runs into a bigger-time death goddess, Santa Muerte. And it turns out that she is actually an old Aztec death goddess. And, of course, when you're going to pull in Aztec stuff, you've got a bunch of names that Mel cannot even remotely pronounce. I can't hardly even read them because there aren't enough vowels. You don't even know how to say it. So you've got a bit of Aztec mythology going along in this story as well. But he gets entangled with Santa Muerte and it's obvious she's basically trying to strike a deal with him. She'll help him do this if basically he turns his soul over to her and works for her. And, you know, he's like, she's crazy. And, no, I don't want to do this. Well, you know, at some point he's probably going to be put into a position that's bad enough that he's going to have to go to Crazy Death Goddess for help. And then things will really get interesting. So that's basically what we're dealing with. The first book, they're setting up a lot of backstory of how L.A. is and setting up the magic system and the thing going on with his friends. And he's trying to figure out through all of this who killed his sister. And he actually has to go to her house. And while she hasn't left a ghost behind for him to actually talk to about who killed her, she's left an echo, which basically is something that will fade away with time, but it could take years, is reliving the moment of her death over and over and over again. And it turns out that it's really not, this is a spoiler, folks, of course, but it turns out that she was really only killed as a message to him. Her killer leaves a message in her blood on the wall that they then wipe away that says, "Welcome home, Eric." And so it's, and then, you know, they wipe it away so the cops never see this. The message was only for him because he's one of the only people in creation that would be able to relive this memory and see this message. So it's meant for no one but him to see. And his sister was really horribly, horribly tortured, murdered, just as a message to him to get him back to L.A. And that's the point of the first book, is to find out who did that and why, and possibly if it's the ghost of that mobster that he killed 15 years ago who has somehow made its way back from death. There's some neat traveling to the spirit world stuff that's pretty cool. I have recommended a series in the past called The Dresden Files, which I have to say is one of my favorite series, and I bring it up because this series gives me a definite Dresden Files type of feel to it, in that Dresden Files was kind of noir as well. But I would say the Eric Carter books are a little darker than the beginning of the Dresden Files series was, in that Harry Dresden wasn't really into killing everybody he saw. Eric Carter doesn't have a problem killing anybody. He tries to be a decent guy, but he'll kill you. That's okay. You're probably better as a dead person than you are as a real person anyway. So the second book is called Broken Souls. And I'm not really gonna give you any spoilers on that one, other than that it's recently come out, and it's a continuation of the story. Santa Muerte is still around, but basically LA gets turned into a big war zone between a bunch of different magical types and some demons. And there's a guy running around with a magic knife that can basically skin you so that he can wear your skin and basically take over your persona and fool everybody. And so there's a big war going on over who has this knife, and are your friends really your friends, or is it this guy who's wearing their skin? So very Silence of the Lambs thing going on here. Wearing people's skins.
Please, please tell me one of the people he skins is named Edgar.
No. No one was wearing an Edgar suit. I so wished they were. But the knife, you know, the knife might survive that book, so there's still hope that in future books there might be an Edgar suit. We'll have to tweet at Steven and tell him he needs to really put an Edgar suit in the next
book.
But it's a very neat series. It reminded me a lot of Dresden Files, which is a series that I really love. Eric is a very sarcastic little magician man, and he gets the job done. He's not always real pretty about it. There's usually a lot of chaos and mayhem, but he tries to get the job done and not kill everybody, or at least the people that he likes. So I really liked it. I was really impressed with it. I read both books over a single weekend. They're not... let me see. I think the first book here I'm looking is about 300 pages. So they're not huge. They're very readable. The stories are very fast paced. you know, you a lot of times with these sort of stories, they go into so much backstory trying to explain all their angst and everything. They basically get straight to the action in these books. They're very fast-paced. They go very quickly. You get to the point, and I really like it, and I really like the magical system. So far, there haven't been any elves and fairies running around, but I do believe he mentioned that vampires are real. And yes, actually, there are some vampires in the second book. But it's mainly dealing with ghosts and spirits and elemental type magic. So it's a little bit different than a lot of the urban fantasy going around out there that are all having to deal with, you know, sexy, hunky people. This is gritty noir. And a lot of people die. A lot of people get shot. There's a lot of weapons. And the magical tattoos are really cool. So I really think, especially if you're a fan of the Dresden Files, or you're a fan of gritty type urban fantasy, then I think you'll really like this series. I think you should give it a shot while it's only at 2 books. When you have a hope of catching up, unlike Dresden Files, which is going to take you a long time to read through all of those books. So get in on the Eric Carter series before it gets too big, because I think this one's going to go places. And I really hope all of you read it and help it go places, because I think it's good. And it would be great if we get more stories, because I want to find out what happens.
Great. And I think you can just put on Ambien 4 on land and start to read, and you're going to have the full nurture and support experience there. So that'll be a good deal. So something constructive and something not constructive. Constructive, you recommended Stephen Blackmore in episode 15. It's your social media recommendation, episode 15.
Thanks.
Going to our handy-dandy reference page, I was able to find that. On the not-so-constructive side, so does Santa Morte's belly shake like a bowl full of jelly when she laughs or not?
She does not, and I would not suggest that you bring that up to her.
It would be unwise, okay.
Even if it did, you should never mention it.
Fair enough.
She is. She's crazy.
Never tick off a minor death god.
No, not at all. I wouldn't recommend messing with her. She's bad news.
Gotcha. So noted. And I like that. Those are Kelly-sized books. 300 pages is a doable amount for me.
It's a fast read, and it's fun. It's fun despite all of the grittiness to it. It's a fun read. Like I said, Eric's very sarcastic, very in the moment, not a big fan of technology. He doesn't even have a cell phone. And I meant to mention, he's somewhat of a criminal. He steals all of his cars.
You gotta do. That's right.
He's a good guy, but might be lacking a little bit on the moral fiber scale of things. So, yeah. He's a very interesting character. I think everybody should get to know him a little bit better.
Sounds like I'd like him.
Yeah.
My kind of guy. Cool. Well, those are 2 really cool recommendations. So, we'll go ahead and move into the social media portion of our show. And my recommendation for this week is a young lady on the West Coast who goes by Becca Face, or at BeccaFaceXO. Becca Face. Becca Face as well. And she's hilarious. And so this is a recent follow. I just come across she had been retweeted by somebody I follow, and what was retweeted was really funny, and then I went kind of into her timeline, and it looks like when she kind of fires out one of these I'm trying to be clever or funny tweets, you know, they average around 300 to 500 retweets and favorites each one. So she gets pretty good traction. She doesn't have like a ridiculous amount of followers. She's got a pretty large number, but she gets a lot of traction with her stuff, and there's a reason why, because she's just funny. So this recommendation, Becca Face, is just kind of a fun timeline addition to give you an example of some of her work. And she actually had this tweet pinned up at the top of her timeline. If I ever get kidnapped, my plan is to just talk nonstop about Lost until they see I'm very annoying and then return me to safety, which I thought was an excellent plan. So that gives you a kind of the gist. And there's one, and I won't do it justice, but it was along the lines of, you know, I wish I was a bear because then I'd be out with my bear friends playing. Wait, I'm in an elevator. Did I say that out loud? It was very well constructed. It was very, very funny, but she's very interactive and she's very funny. So just, you know, every once in a while you like to get somebody on your Twitter timeline that's going to be throwing out kind of fun stuff, and it's always just kind of pure humor. It's not what I call edgy or anything like that. She's just fun. So I'm recommending a Becca Face for this week.
Well, I'm glad that she likes bears, because my social media recommendation is a bear.
Oh, there you go.
The Twitter handle is @a_single_bear. And his byline is, "Hello, I am a bear."
Okay.
I don't know when I came across this. I think somebody retweeted something from this account, and I've been following it for several weeks now, and it's just little ramblings that almost always end with the phrase, "I am a bear." So one from today is, "Rain is the sky giving you free water to drink. That's very nice of you, Sky. You don't even ask for anything back. I am a bear." It's just little random things like that, and they make me laugh. I'm sorry. I think it's adorable. So this account recently, they have a website called HelloIAmABear.com. And so recently they had a thing where if you had a question for the bear, they would answer it. And one of the questions that someone asked was, "Dear Bear, how can we create world peace?" And his response was, and this is way over 140 characters, this is why it's on the website, is, "I believe that if everyone focused more on sleeping and eating and smelling new smells, then there would be much more peace around the world. Those squirrels and deer would likely ruin it. Because of squirrels and deer, world peace is probably impossible." Because of squirrels and deer.
There you go.
Blame it all on them. We have a new scapegoat and squirrels and deer, y'all. So I just think it's funny. It's cute. It's unrelated to anything else going on in my day, which makes me
smile.
Which
is nice, yeah.
So I like it. So @a_single_bear.
And we're going to have to introduce Becca Face to the bear here somehow, because I think they should get along well.
So. Yes. He talks in that about being, about not knowing any other bears. So he would like to know other bears.
That's very, well, there we go. Maybe we can nurture and support that connection. That would be a very good
Absolutely.
Thing. Very cool. Good. Fun stuff. And I've got to think, you know, we always, you know, we record these. Mel does a fantastic job in cutting out about 75% of my ums and stutters and all that, and we get a nice kind of clean thing together to go on the site, and then she usually writes most of the post. I try and help where I can. But my one job is usually the title, is if I can come up with a title. And this the title wrote itself here, because I got to think that this episode's Dark Ambient and Minor Death Gods is
I like
pretty,
it.
Pretty good title for this one. So
yep.
Either that or I'm a bear.
Either one. Two different ends of the spectrum there. I don't know. I bet that bear likes ambient music too, though.
There you go.
He seems like an ambient type bear. So.
Cool. Well, we're going to probably at this point hand it over to our good friend Matt, who will give you all the particulars on how you can contact us through email, comments on our blog, reviews on iTunes, hit us up on Twitter, anything you like. Thanks for joining us again this week.
And we'll be back next week. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
You can contact us on our website, nurtureandsupport.net, or email us at nurtandsup@gmail.com. That's nurtandsupp@gmail.com. Or tweet us at nurtandsup on Twitter.
Nurturing and supporting.